What's cooking? Democracy, self-reliance, and good citizenship. Girl Scout cookies help make it possible for girls to practice the art of democracy, to develop their self-reliance, and to be good citizens. Keep Girl Scouting happening in your community. Bye.
Girl Scout cookies.
Hello, and welcome to another week of crime with us, Girls Talk Crime. My name is Amy, and I am, of course, joined by Georgia, who is currently eating a cheeky Nando's.
Howdy doody.
And Jenny.
Hello. I'm not eating Nando's. I'm sat in bed under the duvet. It's cozy.
Getting all snug. So we're in the lead up to Halloween, so I picked a case for you this week that is truly haunting. This is because when you go on a family holiday, a school trip, or even get sent to a scout camping trip, as a child, you feel safe with your friends and other campgoers. You're surrounded by adults to look after you, and all you can think about is having fun. So guys, did you ever go on any school trips when you were younger, or brownie or guide camps?
I think I've only ever been on a camping trip once, and I hated it, and I didn't poo for an entire week.
Because I wouldn't go in the camp toilets.
So yeah. I was full of shit.
Yeah. Jen?
I used to do girl guides, and I've been on many of a guide camping holiday. I used to love it, though. I used to have the best time.
Yeah.
I did get pneumonia, though, and nearly die.
Was that when I went on guide camp with you and you got that?
So it was like two camping kind of trips that I did within like a week. So we had do you remember we used to do our sleepover club, and then we decided to do one for charity, and we slept in your back garden, and you did like bush tucker trials. We had to eat like pick a lily and stuff to win coins.
That's what gave me my horrible fear of tartar sauce. I hate it because of that bush tucker trial.
Because we just set loads of condiments, and then the tent was really wet. And I was sleeping on the outside, and I remember I was freezing cold, and I was like, please, can you all move up? Because I was literally sleeping flush to the, like, outside of the wall, so I was wet. And none of you got fucking bitches would let me come in the middle and have a turn in the middle. And then I went to guide camp, like, a few days afterwards.
That one I remember because I was also on the outside, but on the other side of the tent. And I was, like, the only, like, little idiot who didn't have a proper sleeping mat. And so I was just, like, on blankets. And there was a slug on my bed at the end.
Didn't we wake up and there was loads of slugs?
Fucking gross.
Yeah.
That was one fun trip. And then literally a few days afterwards, I went on like a guide camp for like a week. And again, slept in like a damp, horrible tent. And then I got pneumonia and I was in hospital for 2 weeks.
Bloody hell. I didn't know you could just catch pneumonia. Is that just from being cold?
From being cold, yeah.
Yeah.
Was that a child I just heard in the background?
You bitches nearly killed me. Yeah, I heard that as well. I thought that was in your house. Oh, don't know, because now I'm scared.
It freaked out.
Did you not? That was proper clear. Like, yeah, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Oh, it's probably Dan and Rich playing PlayStation. Maybe.
Yeah, freaked me out a little bit.
Sounded like a child.
Freaked out already. Our first October episode.
What's cooking? Democracy, self-reliance, and good citizenship.
On the 12th of June 1977, over 140 girls travelled to Camp Scott in Oklahoma, USA. Camp Scott was in its 49th year of housing Girl Scout groups. This is a lot of visits from thousands of young children, year in, year out. I will also just mention that Camp Scott just reminds me of like a slasher horror movie already before we even get started looking into this story. Does that what you guys kind of ring a bell when I say Camp Scott?
Yeah,
Friday the 13th.
Yeah.
Yeah, me, don't worry.
Also, then you started watching the new series of American Horror Story.
No, but I've got it recorded. I was going to watch it at some point this week, but I like to stack them up a bit. But that's very similar sort of setup, isn't it?
Yeah, so I'm not a big fan of like the newer series, but I always kind of give them a go. And I watched the first episode, it was all right. But I think it's kind of based, it's in the 80s, not the 70s, but it's kind of based on kind of before the kids come. So it's like all the counsellors. And I'm guessing their orders get like picked off one by one.
I see, yeah.
Now, this is back in 1977. They did not have tents like I remember having at guide camps. These tents looked more like heavy-duty awnings and could also be described as a bell tent. So I'll put a picture up on our Instagram or Facebook, but for now, we'll just try and describe this for you.
Now, firstly, it does not help that these pictures are in black and white, so they just look freaky already. There is no way, just no way, I could sleep in one of those, because with my imagination, I would be picturing that a psycho killer would be coming in anyway. So, yeah, not happening. I'm sure they were terrifying at night as well, because can you imagine the trees, like the shadow of them coming through? Fuck that. These tents are quite big and have the general shape of a house with a pointed roof. There are wooden steps leading up to the front entrance and back entrance, or exit, of the tent, which has no zips. Each side has hooks to hold the flaps of the tent open, then to close the tent, you would just undo it. So I guess it would kind of be like walking through a curtain. That is like the only way I can think of describing it, just like a flap.
That's like having a house and not locking it. Even though, like, yeah, a tent doesn't lock, I know, but it's weird. I just feel like safer with, because you'd be able to hear that if someone was like undoing it, whereas you would be able to hear a flap.
That was a really good impression of a zip.
To go on guide camp, we literally had these old tents.
Did you?
They had, like, you know, you get a duffel coat and you get those really big, like, long wooden buttons. They literally had them and used to do up them.
Really? Are you sure they weren't the windows? Toggle. I remember the windows having those.
No, I mean, like, the tents we had, I know what you mean, had those toggles on it, but these, my guide group anyway, literally they were like green canvas tents and they had like poles. So you'd like put up like almost like a skeleton and you put the canvas over and then the canvas had those like big buttons that you did up. It wasn't a zip. It was freaky. It was freaky. They were old. Also, just to go back to the freaky camping stories, we used to like camp in my back garden all the time when we were kids. And one time, me and my childhood friend Gemma decided to have a sleepover in our tent in the back garden, like in the summer. And in the middle of the night, someone started throwing lumps of wood over. Do you remember my mum and dad had these really high trees?
Yeah.
Literally lumps, and I mean like fat off little like logs. Came like hurtling down and like started hitting the tent.
Ooh,
and then in the night, and so I got out and I was like, I thought it was Andrew. It was like trees and then an alley and some crazy ass woman. My dad had like cut the trees down and obviously bits of tree had fallen down into this back alley and she decided to throw them back into the garden, but in like the middle of the night. It was really scary.
She could hear you, like she was pissed off.
She must have, because I don't think she was hurling them over the trees because it'd been too high. She must have been poking her hand through the trees and throwing them like that. Does that make sense?
That's even worse. Or it's some like supernatural thing going on right there.
Yeah, but we went inside. We spent the rest of the night inside. I also, sorry, I've gone on a tangent now with camping stories. Me and Gemma used to camp out a lot in my back garden. I remember once we put the tent right next to the garage and I got an extension cord, plugged it in the garage, put it into the tent, and I brought my TV outside and put it in the tent. You know, like the fat off massive TVs with the DVD player. My dad went fucking ape shit. He was like, you know that's how dangerous this is.
That's so you as well. Yeah. To do something, it's like you putting it on the edge of a bath.
Literally, it was. I literally put it on the wet grass.
Oh shit.
Idiot.
Camp Scott was made up of units to segregate the girls by age, and these girls would share tents with up to 3 girls in each one. Each unit would have up to 8 tents, which would include a counsellor camping within one of those. This story takes us to the Kiowa unit, which I'm probably butchering saying. This unit was on the outskirts of Camp Scott, looking over a woodland area onto a road which continued to even more woodland area. As well as this, the Kiowa unit was very isolated. If you were to count from the first tent to number 8, the tents would become more and more out of sight. From the counsellor's tent, they could see up to tent number 6 with no problems, but the shower block in the unit practically covered tent 7 and completely covered tent 8.
Now, in different articles, they will include the counsellor's tent in the count, or they do not. For the sake of this story we're telling, I'm going to include the counsellor's tent. So on the 12th of June, 1977, Laurie Lee Farmer, aged 8, Michelle Heather Goose, aged 9, and Doris Denise Milner, aged 10, were assigned to tent number 8. Now, there was actually another girl originally assigned to this tent, but luckily for her, because you would only have normally 3 girls in each tent, she actually got moved on. So there was like an issue with kind of assigning girls to the tents, and she got moved to a different unit. So she got a lucky escape.
Yeah.
Laurie was the youngest of the 3 girls at just 8 years of age. She was clever and had gone up a grade at school. During the break at Camp Scott, she was to turn 9 years old and celebrate this at camp.
Michelle was 9 years old and had visited this camp many times before as a Girl Scout. She was an athlete and loved to play football.
Doris, who liked to be called Denise, was 10 years old and did not want to go to camp. Denise would worry a lot and would not like to be away from home. And let me just step in. This was... Oh, I can relate. I was that little girl. I hated going to sleepovers. Do you guys remember?
Yeah, I remember.
Always be the one who'd be homesick and having to go home because I was like, I can't do it.
Can you remember when we had a... Georgia came and slept at... Oh, I think it might have been your house, Amy. And she fell asleep and hadn't gone home and we all clapped. You remember doing that?
I completely forgot that Georgia didn't like going to sleepovers, and you just rejolted my memory.
Yeah, I used to hate them.
I can literally remember that now.
Yeah, because we wanted you to stay so much that we would kind of do everything we could to kind of not make you think about going home.
It's because I used to feel sick. Do you remember? I used to feel sick, and then I'd be like, I want to go home.
Literally, I remember that. So, like, you falling asleep, and you had your little chum. You know those pajamas we always used to wear, where they had like almost like a shirt, like a button-down shirt, and like trousers, and we were all wearing those. And Georgia fell asleep, and we all looked at each other, and we were like silent
applause.
Munching into our Doritos.
Poor Denise. I can completely relate to how she feels, like loving it, like love the idea of it, but you get there and you're like shitting yourself. So Denise had finally told her mum she was ready. But on the day of the camp, she changed her mind. Denise's mum told her that if she didn't like camp after a few days, she could come back home. So sad.
This is a scary story, but it's also so sad.
It is really horrible, guys. So, you know, you're either in for a treat or you're not, if you like that kind of thing.
I literally don't think this is a treat at all.
No, it's not.
If you're fucked up like myself, I would enjoy listening to this, but it would make me sad.
At 6 p.m, they had all had their dinner out in the campsite. Come 7 p.m, a storm hit and all had to immediately go back to their tents. This was the first night. The weather was bad. They had also just met their soon-to-be new friends they were going to share their tent with for the next 2 weeks. The council set them all a task. This task was to write a letter home to loved ones.
This does seem very early for this sort of activity, but they genuinely had nothing else to do. They were stuck in the tent and it was horrendous weather.
They didn't have iPhones or iPads.
Yeah, that's literally what we'd be doing.
In a way, I do quite like the idea of being in a tent in the rain, maybe just for a little bit.
I did it this morning because it was fucking it down this morning. I had a bit of a lie-in before work. But that also just makes me think of Parent Trap.
Yeah.
When they're stuck in that cabin and they're like playing all card games and stuff. I'm like, oh,
I love that film.
So I quite like the idea of that as well. I see what you say.
Each of these letters talked about making new friends, how much they loved their families, and how their time had been so far. But one letter stands out as utterly heartbreaking. This letter was written from Denise to her mum.
Dear mum, I don't like camp. It's awful. The first day rained. I've got 3 new friends named Linda, Laurie and Michelle. Michelle and Laurie are my roommates. Mum, I don't want to stay at camp for 2 weeks. I want to come home and see Casey and everybody. Your loving child, Denise Milner. Oh, imagine getting that as a mum. Yeah. I'm not a mum, but oh my God, that would absolutely break my heart.
No, but what's worse, she would have got this afterwards.
Yeah, I know, but seeing that afterwards, isn't it, and being like, that would break my heart.
See, you can see all the letters that the girls had written. We're not going to read them all out. You can look them up for yourselves, but they're all, to be honest, they're all kind of a bit similar in a way.
Yeah.
So, I suppose they didn't really have a lot to write about because they'd only just got there. For the rest of the evening, the girls would get to know each other further. I can only imagine that they would be chatting about their friends and their families, having a giggle, playing around to entertain themselves before settling down to sleep. We've already kind of touched on the fact that we used to have sleepovers and stuff. I can remember for a fact that even though it's embarrassing to talk about, we used to have one of those old-fashioned tape recorders and we used to record all of our farts on a tape and kill it, play them back.
We also had... well, he was in the first sleepover group. So you remember that program, You Wanna Sleep Over? And they had like a sleepover club?
Yeah, we had what that.
George wasn't in the first one, is that right?
Fuck you.
Yeah. But you didn't like sleepovers. That was why. That's probably why we didn't.
Yeah. That makes sense now.
And then me, Amy, and Bridie made a new group and you lot were fuming.
Yeah.
We were fuming. So, you only had like one sleepover and we consistently did them for like a good year.
Yeah, it's true. We had one. But we made badges group, and everything.
Yeah, our first group was called Lush, and we had a little like pass with our photo on it that had our favourite fruit.
No, but the thing is, you guys all took like the good fruits, and I was like, well, I don't like any of the other fruits, so I chose vanilla.
So original. Yeah, and I had to draw that on a fucking card, like two brown lines.
And then squeaking in the middle.
It was pretty fitting. It was just called Witches Bitches, wasn't it?
Yeah. That was a cool one. Mm. We didn't laminate them, did we? We just put individual lines of sellotape over to make them laminated.
At least but nowadays, you get bloody mugs printed.
Yeah. Well, back on to just quickly camp experience. I actually had to sleep in one of the teachers' camp, like tents. In their proper, they had little raised beds. No, it was a woman. She went and stayed in like the lounge because it was me and another girl, and we got so homesick and I got so hysterical. They were like, "Come sleep in our beds. They're proper like raised up beds." And I was like, "Okay." And I, like, my mum knew how worried I was about it, and I was in primary school, and she actually got me these like wristbands that put pressure points on your wrists. To help calm my anxiety. I've had anxiety since I was a small child. It's such a joke.
Riddled with it.
I literally am. It's so bad. But that was my camp experience.
We went to the Isle of Wight in primary school. Me and Amy went to the same primary school.
Mm-hmm. That trip.
It was. Do you remember that we stayed in a hotel? Like they put all of these like young children in this like little family-run hotel.
It was like a horror hotel.
And it was like a horror hotel. It was like setting out The Shining. And
it was horrible.
Didn't the hotel owner's kids live there? And they just told us how it was haunted and how you had to say goodnight to the headless lady at the top of the stairs. And what would you be like?
The top of the stairs.
Stairs?
We did it. I remember going up these stairs and being like, good night, lady. Like under my breath. And then the little prick went around and like banged on our windows.
Because we were one of the ones, we were on the bottom floor. And I know, because he was wearing one of those, you know, those like funny hats that you get from a joke shop. And it's like a tartan hat with like a ginger hair coming out.
and a pom-pom at top.
And a pom-pom at the top. He was wearing one of them. Shit ourselves.
He got in a lot of trouble though. I remember them.
If that's your like business, your children have just gone round and scared pretty much all of your paying customers to death. Yeah.
Like our previous podcast, we have gone off on a tangent. So just a quick one. Obviously, the girls have written letters home and they have probably had a giggle and they've settled down to sleep. So it's around midnight. All the girls have presumably been asleep, but something awoke Caria Wilhiti. I don't know how the hell you're saying this name. Another butchering. But she was Kiowas, another unpronounceable word, unit counsellor. In the documentary we watched, she had an interview with this young counsellor who at the time, I think, was around 20 to 22 years old. A lot of responsibility for the safety of up to 21 younger. Caria was awoken by a moaning noise. Nope, No thanks. Even if that's murder or sex, I don't want to hear it. Both makes me feel very uncomfortable.
It definitely shouldn't be sex, but...
but you know, just, you know, a moaning noise.
Carrier described this noise as non-human but not animal. So there's not much left. Now, I get it is easy to freak yourself out. These camp counsellors were known to play pranks on each other and tell spooky stories. For some strange reason, this is just the done thing for what you do when you go away camping.
Agreed.
Do you remember, I'm kind of, we're going to end up going off on a tangent again here, but do you remember the programme, Are You Afraid of the Dark?
Yes.
And then at the beginning, they would all go around the campfire and they would start their horrendous story that was absolutely terrifying for that age group. And then at the end, they would put out the campfire with like the water and they'll like go away into like the forest.
I prefer Goosebumps, I must admit.
Yeah, that's exactly what I was going to say. It reminds me of Goosebumps. We had a episode of Goosebumps, but it was one that was like not shown on TV, and my older brother loved Goosebumps, and it was about this like haunted mask that like suctioned onto your face and turned you evil.
That's why it wasn't and played it, on TV. It was pornographic.
Yeah. And it terrified me. And Andrew, if you are listening, he's always been made out to be like the golden child, but I didn't want to watch it. And he sat on me and held my eyes open to make me watch it.
See, I remember the episode, and I don't know if it was Ivory or the Dark of Goosebumps, but it was when there was like a monster alien thing that took over her dad, and there was her real dad and like this monster dad, and she had to pick between the right one. She picked the wrong one.
Oh,
and
God.
I could not look at my dad for like a week after that episode, because I thought he was like this alien thing that fucking horrible. But the reason I say Ivory of the Dark is because I can just imagine those camp counsellors sitting around the fire and like just freaking each other out.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Oh, totally. Now, going back to weeks before the Girl Scout camp in April 1977, the camp counsellors had their safety training, a bit like an introduction to the workplace. Pranks must have happened throughout the 49 years that Camp Scott had been running. The odd sock going missing, the silly message left on the bathroom mirror. But on this training day, a so-called plank took a plank.
Terrifying plank.
But on this training day, a so-called prank took a sinister turn.
One of the counsellors' tents was completely ransacked. In the tent was a box of donuts. Well done, camp counsellors. Must-haves. But the donuts had been taken, leaving behind the empty box. Now, that just sounds like an innocent prank. I mean, that would be me. I would have eaten all the donuts. But left behind was a handwritten note which vowed to murder three children, which is fucking dark. You would have thought this had got the counsellor's attention, wouldn't you? Mm-hmm. You'd think, oh shit, maybe we need to look into this, rather than it just being a dark prank.
I think writing something like that, like, not even disciplining action, but people should have been spoken to.
Yeah, like, this isn't fucking funny. We need to get to the bottom of this, because stuff like this needs to be taken seriously. But they didn't, and the note was discarded, and they carried on as normal. Could this have been a coincidence or a premonition or an evil plan for a mystery person who lurks in the woods?
Back to the night of the 13th of June 1977. Carrier was freaked out, but she knew she could hear these noises and she couldn't just ignore it. She had to go and investigate. She walked out of her tent with her flashlight and beamed it along the tents in her sight. She then pointed her flashlight towards the woodland area. What she could see was a dull light flashing back towards her. When her flashlight shone towards the mysterious light, it would disappear, but then it would shortly return in a different area of the woodland. What the fuck?
She was shitting herself. It was pitch black. She'd heard moaning noises. There was a strange light coming from the woodland area, but all the tents were quiet, so the girls must have been fine. So she went back to bed until the morning.
I wonder what these like moaning noises actually heard, like, sounded like, if it doesn't sound human or animal.
Must have like a slight screechy noise, like, to it, I imagine.
Oh no, I'm thinking more like guttural.
What's guttural?
like taking a shit.
Yeah.
If it sounded like that, you'd think someone's hurt.
Yeah.
So I'm thinking
if it was pushing out. You think it was a little girl? Yeah, I can't pull a little girl's.
Yeah, a moan. I just can't quite. I'd like describe it for me, would you? If I was a detective.
It doesn't the thought of hearing a moaning noise at midnight in the middle of fucking nowhere just like it actually like makes my like hair stand on end. My non-hairy upstand on it.
Yeah, fuck you, bitch.
It's now the morning of the 13th of July, 1997. Kari has set her alarm early to beat the rush to the shower block. The sun was just breaking. It was warm, and due to the storm of the previous night, this had made the air muggy. As she walked towards the showers, something caught her eye. This stopped her in her tracks. As she stared at the misplaced object, she started to walk closer and closer. This is when she realised it was a sleeping bag. Kari instantly thought that this was luggage that may have been dropped, but as she approached, she soon realised this was not the case.
The first found victim was placed in the zipped-up sleeping bag dumped on the edge of the woodland area in Camp Scott. This was Denise Milner. In shock, Kari rushed to get help. They had no idea this was an unknown murderer lurking in the woods. Instantly, they had thought this was a wild animal that had dragged Denise out of her tent in her sleeping bag.
That's a pretty rational thought as well.
Yeah.
With it being America, they do have like, what are they called? Like mountain lions and stuff like that, don't they? Not sure if they're native to the area, but they do have big cats and big dogs. So it's a pretty rational thought.
Yeah, and they wouldn't have like kind of seen extent of any injuries at this point either.
That's what you would think. Yeah, that is what you think.
And it was just one child they found so far. They weren't together.
Shortly after the discovery of Denise, two other sleeping bags were found. These sleeping bags looked empty at first. A handful of counsellors and one of their husbands looked in the sleeping bags. This is when the bodies of Laurie and Michelle were found.
They must have been tucked up so small to look empty.
Yeah.
Poor babies. Police, ambulances, and also the OSBI arrived, which is the Oklahoma State Bureau of Investigation. The crime scene was set, as this was no animal attack. The rest of Camp Scott was evacuated. The children returned to their parents with only the information that there had been an accident. The parents of the three deceased children didn't find out it was their daughters until the press released the details. Can you imagine being stood waiting for your child to come home, not knowing if your child's okay?
Oh, horrible.
Because surely if you knew there'd been an accident, you would consider that someone had got hurt. So it's almost like pot luck if you're watching every single child get off that bus apart from yours and then it clicks.
Oh, that's horrible.
With my child. Yeah, that makes me want to cry.
The OSBI had to piece together what happened to these three little girls. By analysing blood splatter inside the tent, they could determine that Laurie and Michelle had been struck from behind as they lay in their bunk beds, most likely resulting in their deaths inside the tent. These two girls were then dumped in their own sleeping bags in the woods. Denise was treated differently. Evidence would show that Denise was dragged or carried through the woods on the adjacent side of the camp to the other girls. Excessive force was used to subdue all the girls, and they had been sexually assaulted.
The perpetrator tried to poorly cover up their tracks, using mattress covers and towels from the girls' tent to wipe up the blood. These were then stuffed into the sleeping bags with the girls' bodies. At the crime scene, a red flashlight, duct tape, and nylon rope were left behind. As well as this, several pairs of prescription glasses had been taken from the counsellor's tent and were dumped near the bodies. What do you think about
that? Sick Specsaver bastard.
It's a weird thing, isn't it, to take and not take with you?
It's a really fucking weird thing to take. It's like,
unless the perpetrator needed glasses and he couldn't see and he'd forgotten them, and so he took a load to try them on, see if they were his prescription.
Or he's taken them as so that his potential witnesses are visually impaired, so they can't make a formal identification.
That's actually got a lot more logic in it than just going out and trying on everyone's glasses.
Before he makes a trip to Specsavers to choose the best pair.
Oh.
The first person to be investigated was a local farmer called Jack Shroff. Sounds a bit like a, what's that word?
Trough.
It sounds like they have it in farms where the trough in it, that's it. So the first person to be investigated was a local farmer called Jack Shroff, who owned a farm near Camp Scott. The OSBI managed to track that the red flashlight, duct tape, and nylon rope had come from his farm. Jack could corroborate
that these items had been stolen using a lie detector. He also had an alibi for his whereabouts. Jack was no longer a suspect, but the press still hounded this man, and due to this distress, he was hospitalised. I hate paparazzi sometimes. They are full-blown wankers, aren't they?
This is where we come to the second lead, Jean Leroy Hart. He was 33 years of age and was a successful ex-professional football player. But back in 1966, he had kidnapped two pregnant women. He bound them with nylon rope and duct tape and then put them into the boot of his car. He then raped these women at gunpoint. Jean left these women for dead, but luckily one escaped and found help. Jean was serving his sentence for this crime and also burglary. But on the day of the Girl Scout murders, he had previously escaped prison for the second time and was on the loose. A bit similar to Ted Bundy when you think that he also escaped prison. Was it twice? Three times?
Yeah, I think he did it twice. He was a Briton, but yeah, the Houdini, wasn't he?
And I will also just mention the whereabouts of Ted Bundy in 1977 was actually unknown. There is speculation that he may have committed these crimes, but to be fair, I find that pretty unlikely, as Ted Bundy had a very particular type of victim. These victims, I would say they were too young. I'm pretty sure
he doesn't really have a rap for killing children. It's more like young adults, if anything, wasn't it?
Yeah, it's young women. It's young women, but not children.
Yeah. And also the way that these girls weren't kept, and Ted Bundy kept a lot of his victims, Sydney, before suspecting of them.
I mean, it's a good theory. I think that's more of a fan theory, isn't it? Like, people who are clued up on this case speculate that it could be Ted Bundy.
But it's food for thought, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
One more strange fact about the attack on these women in 1966. Jean had taken off and wore, wait for it, their glasses. And these glasses were never found. 10 days after the Girl Scout murders at Camp Scott, 1977, a local reported a man sat in a cave. When the OSBI investigated, they found an interesting set of items that could link to the attacks. A red flashlight with a small folded up bit of newspaper, presumably to help the elements in the battery compartment. Plastic and a piece of material to cover a flashlight's lens, maybe so not to draw the attention to the light, you know, like he's used something to cover it up and poke holes
in
it.
Well, if it was like seen throughout the wood line in it, that's, he may have just blocked it using that so that it didn't draw attention.
A photograph of three women, a pair of red knickers, and finally, to top it all off, glasses. More fucking glasses. They're getting everywhere.
When going to the media to help identify these women, the prison officer claimed he took the photos as he was a moonlight photographer in his own time. So how does that connect it to Jean Hart? Jean Hart had developed this photo when he was in prison serving his sentence for kidnap, rape and burglary. They needed answers, but he was on the run and it would be very unlikely he would return back to the cave.
So guys, I do apologise if you hear some little breathing in the background, but my little boy has just woken up, so he's just sitting with me. He's only 9 months old, so he can't understand anything that I'm saying. You just felt a bit sad, didn't you? Jean Hart was a Cherokee Indian. Jean went to a medicine man for forgiveness and a place to stay. I didn't look much into this, but it's a native Indian belief that the medicine man is to offer forgiveness no matter how bad the crime they have committed. Police managed to track down Jean through questioning the medicine man's wife. The medicine man.
He lives down Cherry Lane.
And the house where Jean was hiding out was raided. Jean was inside. Jean was being questioned, but he would not give anything away. More evidence could now be tested. The tape that bound Denise Milner's hands had similar hairs stuck onto it to Jean Hart's hairs. The semen found at the crime scene proved inconclusive, as in the 70s, they just didn't have good enough resources to test samples.
I think back in the day, when forensic testing wasn't very good, I think they did a lot of it on blood type rather than obviously DNA, like relating it to this person for whatever reason. They were like, oh, he's blood type O, this semen comes from a blood type O, so it's likely that it's that same person as well. I think that's how they used to do it.
It's just not very conclusive, is it?
Jean Hart previously had a vasectomy, therefore sperm would not have shown the semen samples. This vasectomy was apparently unsuccessful. After searching Jean's property at the medicine man's house for the second time, they found more items that had belonged to camp counsellors. For example, a small blue hairbrush and a toy pipe.
When it came to Jean's court hearing, all of this evidence was laid out in front of the jury. Remember, this is 1977, and most of the evidence they had could only prove so much. They had the photograph in the cave nearby taken by Jean, stolen prescription glasses and counsellor's belongings in his possession, hair on the tape, and the fact that the semen could have been his due to that unsuccessful vasectomy.
However, Jean's defence was very strong in expressing their concerns for the police's conduct. They went as far as saying the evidence was tampered with. The defence brought that there was unknown fingerprints on the flashlight at the crime scene that didn't match Jean's. Swabs taken from the girls were not conclusive. The hair found on the tape to bind Denise was similar, but did not mean it was his. And evidence being planted, claiming an investigator placed the photo in the cave from a photo that was still in the prison when the crime took place. The prosecution was also not allowed to mention Jean's previous attacks, as it would be predacious to his defence.
Quite loosey-goosey evidence they've got, isn't it? A lot of it you could say, oh my god, 100% it's him, but there's nothing that solid to really pin it on him. Like, there's no DNA because they didn't have the DNA.
So the verdict was in, not guilty. This case is still unsolved. Jean did have to return to prison to serve his original sentence, but he then died very shortly after on the 4th of June 1979 in the prison's gym after an hour of exercising, lifting weights and jogging.
And I strongly feel this is how I will go. I am that unfit. I will probably die in the gym one day when I eventually make it there.
At least you'd be in the gym. I didn't go to the gym.
Yeah, I signed up and I haven't been yet.
In the words of Homer Simpson, I'm going to die. It's not going to be funny now, don't worry. It didn't stop there. In 2008, DNA was revisited due to enhancements in science. They tested the DNA on the pillowcase that had been used to mop up the blood by the perpetrator. Unfortunately, the DNA was just too deteriorated. Funding is still being raised to test these items further. So, how reliable was Jean as a suspect with the evidence they had? Could it have been a mystery person? Could it have been Ted Bundy? Could it have been more than one person? Stood out to me that two of the girls were killed on the other side and taken away. Could just one person do that? And let's not forget that prank weeks before the incident. Was it a prank or was it real?
First, I was quite solid in thinking that it was Jean, but kind of now, the only thing that I think is weird is the glasses. But again, his defence said a lot that he kind of got set up and stuff. And back in those days, that would have been quite easy to do. And he would have been an ideal perpetrator as well. I don't know. I think it sounds like someone that would have been quite young who would have been, I don't know. I think it sounds like more than one person as well.
Yeah, I do see what you're saying, especially with the bodies, two of them being elsewhere and one obviously being well over there.
Yeah,
I do see what you're saying with that, but it's so hard. It's an old case now, for one. Those poor families, you know, what they went through.
And I suppose with it being shelved for so long, like, it's not something they're going to look into. Girl's dead. The person they thought did it is dead as well.
Yeah, I mean, cold cases can be, like, cold for years and years and years before being solved. Yeah, it's a bit of a tricky one. I do feel like the police, like Amy said, pinned it on Jean when it wasn't. He may not have been it, but yeah, the glasses thing is weird. Like, could he been in the area at the time but didn't commit those murders? But I like those fucking Ray-Bans. Let me have some of those. Like, but then not done the murder. And what about that fingerprint on the flashlight? Whose is that?
Yeah. Where did that come from? Yeah, was it?
Yeah, because Jean was obviously definitely there. He's definitely gone through the tents at some point, whether it's past or present. But did he commit that crime when he didn't want to be caught? He'd already been out for a year. Or did he just fancy his luck? Like, whoever did it knew kind of what tent to aim for. I don't know, they just knew a lot.
This one wasn't in line of sight either, was it, from the main councillor's tents either. This was the tent that was kind of hidden. And what didn't, hang on, I remember listening about it. Didn't in the note it say that they were going to attack tent number one, but tent number one was at the start of the whole thing. But then it could have been misconstrued that tent number eight was tent number one because it was on its own. And it, in that note, it was like, I'm going to kill three kids in tent number one.
I don't think it went into too much detail of what tent.
No, I just vaguely remember reading that or hearing that somewhere.
Yeah, there was also a picture of the cave that he was apparently staying in, and it had some weird writing on it, and I didn't know why I said this because I can't remember what it said. Maybe I'll put a picture up of it on the Instagram page, but there was something carved into the wall. But there was a lot of weird kind of rituals going around. Like, outside the cave, there was loads of burn sites of where they've been doing weird, like, rituals, and they had, what you call them, those dogs that go and investigate crime scenes. They
all, like, dogs.
Cadaver dogs, that was it. There was like three or four of them, and they all like mysteriously died. Like, one got hit by a car, one just died of like a heart attack or something. I didn't go into too much detail of that because that's kind of going very
pet cemetery, like, shit, isn't it?
Yeah,
Indian burial ground.
The documentary that I watched was very much mystical and all that kind of stuff. Mm. There's weird stuff going on.
I have heard that apparently they kind of dismissed that letter that was left in the counselor's tent beforehand, because there was stuff on it, like, about aliens and Martians and stuff, so they kind of put that down to, because they never recovered that letter, did they? They clearly just binned it.
No.
And I also have heard on something I've seen or listened to that when they did that, someone had actually strung a dummy up in a tree.
Oh, right, I haven't heard that.
I might be talking out my ass there. I might have, like, completely got my wires crossed, but...
That could also just very well be, that is the type of fucked up shit that I imagine camp counsellors would have done.
Yeah.
You know, oh, we use it as target practice, bow and arrows and stuff.
I suppose it's just more sad that we will probably, it's very unlikely that we will ever actually know what happened and who it was, and if there was one person, if there were multiple people, if it was a tribal
or Ted Bundy killing. We might never know. I mean, hopefully they do for the girl's family, but I just feel like, obviously it's awful for all of them, but for me it is Denise that really stands out. She didn't want to be there, and her mum said, you know, you've got to stay. Oh, it makes me feel, because I remember, like, I didn't want my mum to leave, just leaving me at my grandma's, and I was mummy crying and stuff, and then my grandma was like, no, she's gone to work. But my mum said when she came to pick me up that she was just knelt on the street waiting for me to come out, like, with her arms outspread. And then my grandma wouldn't let me out at the time because she was like, she thought she'd already gone. But my mum was waiting for me to give her a cuddle, and I never, like, ran down the street. And even that's not a bad thing. It just makes me feel sad anyway that my mum was waiting for me and I didn't show up.
Aww.
That was also the last ever day that Camp Scott was open. So they closed immediately after that, and there's never since been camps there again. So
it's literally been abandoned, hasn't it?
So it's... Yeah.
Oh, I bet that's eerie as fuck now.
Yeah. But yeah, so that's the end of our episode. I'm going to pass over to one of the other girls just to finish up, just because I am holding my little boy. I'm trying to get him to sleep. So I'm going to pass you over.
Good night, Charlie, for one.
Good night, night, baby boy.
So thanks for listening to this week's episode of Girls Talk Crime. As usual, if you could follow us on all of the socials, it would be very much appreciated. Again, a little reminder, as we're getting a lot of people listening, that we just want to see your faces. We want to know who you are. So if you could, on whatever platforms you use, you know, Facebook, Instagram, we do now actually have an up and running Twitter. Just give us a little follow. Share us with your friends if you can. 5-star review on that iTunes if that's something that
you like to do. We've also got a few 5-star reviews, if you as in, like, 5-star ratings, but if you want to leave us a review, that would be great. just so we can actually get some feedback. And we're just looking at baby Charlie now, he's got the mic in his mouth.
And if anyone would like next week's episode to be gatecrashed by baby Charlie again, please do let us know, and we will do it at 5 o'clock in the afternoon. Okay.
So thanks for listening, guys, and join us next week.
Bye.